This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, Google, and more stories about Google, Microsoft throwing in the towel on Nokia-branded devices, and that time a patient's heart procedure was kind of interrupted by a virus scan. All this and more coming up next on the Canadian Tech Podcast. Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 72 for Monday, May 23rd, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
And happy Victoria Day, Derek.
Happy birthday to a monarch who's been dead for over 100 years.
Right. But, you know, hey, she still brought us a lot of things, namely a Monday off in May.
Yeah, exactly. And it was actually beautiful weekend for first time in probably 3 or 4 years.
I'd say 300 or 400 years. You hear some people talking about it. I remember years ago, you know, kids in my class would go camping and freeze a little buns off and be back home by Saturday night.
Right. Fair enough.
You know, well, with the snow and stuff like that. Exactly. So the other thing that's happening is I'm recording I'm at Gardenwood Drive Studios, but I'm not in the permanent studio. I'm in a temporary one this week. Now that we've got moved in, got some stuff set up here. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually sharing the studio space tonight with one of my feline assistants, Marley. So if you hear a meow or two, that's just him. That's just him doing some creative heckling, shall we say.
If you hear a baby whine or two, that's my youngest in bed.
Doing creative heckling as well.
Yeah, through the baby monitor.
Perfect. Okay, so this week, a lot of the news stories seems to be we got almost all Google all the time. But,
yeah,
you know, that's Google, the nature.
And Google. And Google.
And Google.
And Google. And then Netflix.
And then Netflix. And then we're finally doing something. Yeah, so we got a few different things. So.
And then Nokia, you know, and Apple. It's like 2004 all over again.
It is, exactly. But that tends to happen on the week when Google I.O. happens. Google I.O. is, of course, their big developers conference. A couple of things that were announced. Hot on the heels of Amazon's, and some people call it surprising success, with their little home automation little box, as I call it, the whole Alexa virtual assistant. Google's unveiled their answer to it. They've got basically a Google Assistant, which is a personal assistant, along with a tabletop speaker appliance, Google Home. So this thing's basically, I guess, a little bit like your Android phone. If you look at the link in the video, you hear people going, "Hey, Google, you know, verify my flight," or "Hey, Google, make my restaurant reservation," stuff like that. So it's very similar to the Amazon Echo. But, you know, at first when I first heard about this sort of thing, and, you know, you kind of go, really? But then I remember people saying that about the iPhone and things like that. And a lot of people use this thing, this sort of virtual assistant or whatever, like everything from a timer to reading out text messages and stuff like that. What do you think about this sort of thing?
The main distinction right now between Amazon Echo and the likelihood of Google Home, once it's released, that the Google Home device will probably be available outside the U.S.
Right.
And that's what a lot of course, Americans don't cover at all. They're like, oh, well, you know, how's this going to do against the Amazon Echo? Well, for anybody who wants to even try out an Amazon Echo, it's going to do great because everywhere other than the U.S., this thing will probably be available. So that's a great start. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I want two. Like, I want one in my kitchen. I love controlling my Google phone, my Android phone via voice. I do a lot, I would say, with it, probably a lot more than the average person does. I've given Google enough information so that it knows where home is and knows where work is. It would have figured all that out by itself anyway. Like, at 4:30, 5 o'clock, Derek drives home to this location. At 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 sometimes, Derek drives to this location. And it did a few years ago when I still had a Nexus S. It just kind of figured it out. Oh, that's work, that's home. Perfect.
Yep.
And so it would show me and it still shows me my commute time. And if there's a problem on the way, thanks to other Android phones that are on the way and that sort of thing. And plus Waze, of course, their acquisition last year of Waze. And so to get more out of that sort of feature and be able to say, hey, Google, start playing, you know, something radio station from Google Play Music. I've been really, really mm-hmm. tempted to purchase a Google Play Music subscription because it has a ton of music, and the radio stations that they brought in after buying, what was that called? Song Stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, a year or two ago. It works all really, really well. And mm-hmm. I can't get Amazon Prime the way Americans do here yep. in Canada. Well, at least not without jumping through a bunch of hoops that I really can't be bothered to jump through.
Yep. Yep.
So this is great. I want two or three in my house. I want one in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. I want one in my bedroom. If I set up my office again in the basement, I probably want one down there. And I told my boss I want one at work.
There you go. So
because if this works with something like Loblaw's Click and Collect at yep. work, this would be perfect because exactly. that's how I do our quote unquote grocery shopping right now. Mm-hmm. And instead of soliciting the group to find out what they want, spending half an hour, you know, searching through Loblaw's Click and Collect, I could just let everybody be like, hey, Google, add honey to the shopping list. And right. on Friday or Saturday, I can just grab it or double check it on Loblaw's Click and Collect. Great. That looks good. Order it. Pick it up Monday morning. Credit card's already on file. Done. It will just speed that up even faster. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I think it's once you start using it, like I've played with Siri a few times. Again, you're more in the Google world. I'm more in the Apple world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like there's some stuff about Siri I like. I like some abilities for that. And I can definitely see some certain things. Like I know some people like Leo Laporte on This Week in Tech. He uses it. He mostly uses it as a timer when he's basically cooking. You know, mm-hmm. he'll use it like for that. So I can see this sort of thing definitely growing. And again, obviously the ability for it to be available outside the US, because, you know, the Americans go, there's something outside America.
Yeah, it certainly seems like the tech companies do. And certainly the media goes right along with it in a lot of cases because, well, we're here. Like, what do you mean you can't get this over there or like wherever you live? Or, sorry, I forgot your country existed.
Part of the other stuff.
Never heard of it.
No. Part of the other stuff, they also announced a messaging service called Allo. Allo, allo, allo.
Allo. A word we're very accustomed to saying up here because we learned French for 9 years in elementary school.
Yeah.
So it's allo.
Hello. Now, I do know, for example, Edward Snowden, the NSA whistleblower, his concern is it is an end-to-end encryption. So he basically said, don't use it. Now, I know there were some changes made to that.
It's not that there were changes made. It's that it's not on by default. And the whole reason is that because Google's assistant, which like Facebook M or other chatbots, you can bring into the conversation by writing at Google, kind of like a Twitter mention. The whole point of it is, of course, it wants to learn and try to anticipate your needs, right? So if you want that, then yeah, you can't use encryption. Otherwise, Google's not actually looking at your messages. However, you can enable end-to-end encryption. And apparently, from what I've heard, it actually uses the OpenSignal OpenWhisper encryption, which is the same thing that's used in Signal. OpenWhisper makes Signal messaging.
Yes, yes.
And that's used in WhatsApp. And WhatsApp is giving Brazil a hell of a time right now with its literal inability to hand over decrypted messages. So that's actually great. So if you're having a private conversation, go ahead and turn on encryption. Whether you're trading business secrets, proprietary information, I guess in theory, a terrorist, et cetera, it's available. And so you can turn it on, but it is not on by default. And that was Snowden's big, big problem. And that's fine. He can have a beef with whatever he wants, but it's not on by default. And that's what he had a problem with. So
Okay. All right. Some other stuff coming out. They had some more VR announcements. Daydream. Virtual reality headset.
Yeah. Daydream VR platform is where Google's headed with this. So it's going to be a Samsung Gear VR style platform in the sense that, you know, a $70, $80, $90 headset, or up here more like $120 headset, mm-hmm. where that you put your phone inside. However, Daydream is going to have very beefy specs. All the phones that or devices that will eventually slide into a Daydream certified authorized headset are going to have, I think it's a 4K screen and certain sensors and a specific screen latency and that sort of thing to make sure that this actually works really well, no matter right. who you buy your phone from. I know that HTC and Xiaomi and a bunch of other companies have committed to making Daydream-enabled phones and headsets. Google is also going to make its own headset, kind of like a Google Nexus phone device, where it's like, this is really what we want these things to look like. And you'll be able to buy it. But yeah, that should be exciting. I've tried out a couple of cardboard headsets. Of course, I run into the issue of having to hold it and pushing down this little washer on the right to quote unquote click things mm-hmm. or push things on screen. But it's kind of neat. And it's all been really basic demos, but it's kind of fun.
I like the concept, what they're doing. And, you know, as we say, yeah, VR is, you know, whether it's, you know, the Oculus Rift or whatever. Yeah, they've all, one thing that's all common, they've got some pretty beefy specifications. You're not going to be running these on 5 or 6 year old machines, that's for sure.
Right.
Or, you know, so yeah, but it's definitely, yep, something further ahead. I certainly like the idea and the concept. A different way is always good. So we look forward to seeing what's happening there. Okay.
Oh, I just wanted to mention Duo briefly. So there's Duo, Allo and Duo. Duo is Google's competitor for FaceTime. However, like Allo, you'll be able to get the app on both iOS and Android. And so as soon as I get it installed for my parents in the next month or two, I won't have to use FaceTime anymore. And one really cool thing is that the caller's video instantly shows up on the receiving end's device so that you can actually get kind of like call displays. So not only do you know who's calling, you can actually get a preview of what's actually happening on the other end. So whether it's a significant other who's trying to be a little flirty, or friends who are trying to, who are clearly inebriated and calling you from a bar or something like that, or some, you know, you're your child, let's do something PG. Yeah, you'll be able to actually see it ahead of time and know who's on the other end and what they're up to. And so if it's late at night and you're like, oh, who could be calling me? And it's like, I don't know, it's just a buddy of yours who, you know, can probably wait till the morning. You can just, you know, ignore or hang up. But if it's, I don't know, I feel like this is great for, not that I want the situation to happen, obviously, but for somebody who's in trouble. Of any kind, crashed a car, I don't know, being kidnapped or something like that. If they can start a Duo call and actually show what's happening,
Exactly.
Man, that's a powerful thing. Yep. Like
it's definitely a good feature. Like you say, the best analogy is to call display. However, you said you're going to switch your parents over to it. I'm going to sabotage that and keep them on FaceTime because I'm going to email your mom and tell her that her grandchildren look much better using FaceTime than the other one.
Whatever.
That'll do it.
First of all, good luck figuring out my mom's email address. It's a little convoluted. I don't know why, but she has this really weird looking one. She does whatever I say when it comes to technology.
Really good for her. Oh, geez. I tell you, I know your mother's awesome. I'm sure. I haven't had the pleasure to actually meet her yet, but she must be awesome. She's had to put up with you for years, so you know.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you expect,
so
right?
Exactly. She's a saint.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Okay. We go from Google I/O to Google versus France. No, this isn't the latest war in Europe. This is you know, the Google is going to appeal to France, the equivalent of France's Supreme Court, their highest court. Mm-hmm. This is over a legal ruling with the right to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. So this is basically
talked about on the show before.
Yeah, we've talked about this. So this is basically that. Let's say you're a politician or something like that. You've done something, let's say, a little bit embarrassing, you know, possibly a little bit embarrassing.
Like sent a picture of your wiener to someone?
Perhaps. Yeah, there's a good example.
Never happens.
In theory, of course. And let's say you want to run again for the Senate or something like that. But sure, when someone puts your name in, one of the first things that shows up is either the picture of A.D. Wiener or what you've done. So the idea behind this is that you are going to be able to contact search engines and say, I want that to be delisted. I don't want people, if they search my name, to look this up. Now, you know, There's a lot of people on different sides of this. I'm of more of the opinion that, you know, once it's up there, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and you really can't, once it's there, you can't get rid of it. But government of France, they're kind of thinking differently. They're saying, no, you got to take that down. But the problem is Google's tried to do this based on country specific searches.
Right.
So if someone in France wants it, they'll remove it from google.fr. But they, right, you know, if someone goes to google.com or has a VPN or an in another country, they'll still show up. Well, France is saying, well, no, that's not good enough. You got to do it worldwide. This is this has big implications. This is a classic case of the law not keeping up with technology.
Well, no, I disagree in terms of what this is. I really feel like this is just France really, really overreaching. I was going to say reaching around, overreaching, their boundaries, which ultimately are limited to the geographical boundaries of France and the islands that belong to it. And their whole thing is them saying, well, we don't know where French citizens are, and therefore you need to do this worldwide. And obviously Google's saying, no, not going to happen. You can't force us, first of all. And frankly, considering Google pulled out of China, which is a huge market, and is, I know they're trying to play nice now, but for several years they pulled out of China, and mm-hmm. you just can't use Google services in China, even though Android is ridiculously popular. You know, they're saying, like, I could absolutely foresee Google saying, okay, we're just going to leave and watch the French citizens riot in the streets.
Man, they will. The second French Revolution, they'll be getting the guillotine set up again.
Yeah. You want to see, you think they can riot over Uber? Man, you just wait till you take away people's email addresses and maps and...
That'd be the equivalent of taxing good French wine, I tell you. Yeah, the rioting in the street would happen, and oh my God.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm just going to sit back and crack open a nice French Bordeaux and some popcorn and
yeah, so
watch Paris burn, I guess.
Right. So they're taking. So Google's now taking this to the Conseil d'État, so the State Council, and frankly, I have no idea what they're going to say. You know, if this was happening here or in the U.S., I have every confidence that the Supreme Court would say, you're ridiculous. Google, don't listen to them. This has gone far enough. Like, what you're already complying with the letter and spirit of the law. That's fine. But
over there,
I really don't know how this is going to go.
I certainly wouldn't put a large bet either way on it.
Not betting any money. Do not take my money in Vegas or anywhere else. I'm going to sit this one out and we'll see what happens.
Exactly. So we're going to see what happens. Hopefully we can come back with you with some good news, but you know, if not, well, here's something to make you smile. Google's killing off Flash and Chrome.
Yes.
So they're not technically doing it, but what they're doing is they're basically blocking it, saying, you know, okay, this site has Flash. you really want to run it. And then you actually have to do a second click to run it. Right. Now, there is some top 10 sites that have Flash by default, including Yahoo, Facebook, you know, Twitch, Amazon. Mm-hmm. They have a one-year exemption just because there's so many there. They don't want to avoid annoying people with too many prompts.
Right.
But yeah, the idea is, you know, they want people to move to HTML5, which they should. Flash should have been taken out and put to the guillotine in reference to our last story ages ago.
Yeah. So now this has actually been happening already. We actually ran into this at Olio, where we were part of the Toronto FC new away jersey pre-launch a couple of months ago. So we did all the HTML for that, got the design up, the web page up, etc. And the company that supplies the jersey customizer ran into this issue, this exact issue, where the customizer is done in Flash. And ultimately, at this point, it really has to be done in Flash. It cannot be reliably done in HTML5. So they don't really have a choice. But the MLSC folks were saying, hey, I'm trying to test this out, and like nothing's happening. Well, you actually had to click on the area where the jersey would eventually show up. It was just like a green pitch. Dear. And there was actually a little play button in there. So you actually click that, and then it would start working. So yes, so the way I've already seen this intelligent pause that they've been doing for a little while already in action and causing issues. But you know, ultimately, it's just, it has to happen. Adobe's done. They've given up on Flash on mobile a while ago. And on desktop now, they're more than happy to just produce tools now that let people code awesome things, whether it's in Flash or not. So when the vendor's given up, well, what are you
going to do? That's a good
sign. Yeah, it's a good sign on moving forward, I guess.
Exactly. So, yes, I don't think we really have a party for it, but there we go.
No.
Okay, our good friends at Netflix, who just continue to have all sorts of cool series. It's one of the first things we set back up again, our Plex server and our Netflix and all that when we moved. Mm-hmm. They have a website now for a quick and easy internet speed test, so you can annoy your ISP if they're not. Sorry, that's my tinfoil hat voice. If they're not quite giving you the speed you want, all you got to do is anyone can do it. Even my mother and your mother, Derek, can do this.
Yep.
Go to fast.com, hit enter. I'm doing it right now as we speak. A little thing
comes up.
Did you have to hit
enter? I didn't even have to hit enter. It just started going.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I typed the URL and hit enter.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, it starts going. And, for example, right now, 24 megabits, baby, I got right now. Now, I do have to admit one interesting thing. When I first heard about this, I just went, okay, fast.com, I typed it. And, again, I've got this new faster service. So I thought the Fast logo was actually saying, oh, your thing is fast. You know, I was expecting like it to be medium or, you know, just the way it worked out, right? You know,
it was
kind of funny. But they do have a link to speedtest.net as well at the bottom. So, yeah, this will be handy. I think this is more because Netflix gets tired of people emailing them saying, how come everything's so stuttering and slow and stuff like that, where the problem is it's your good old ISPs, particularly in the States.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never really had an issue here. Well, at my old house, I had Bell DSL. I think it was a Canek DSL or something like that, but still running over Bell's lines, obviously. And we figured out pretty quickly that Bell was throttling any sort of live video I wanted to watch, including but not limited to TechCrunch TV. If they had a live stream happening, it was unwatchable. And so as soon as I switched over to Rogers cable internet, things were much, much better. And so on, and I called Bell out on it. And of course, they're like, oh, well, no, we do blah, blah, blah to help our thy network. I'm like, yeah, but this is like a super legitimate website. And I'm just trying to watch live video, even at like 400 kilobits per second. And you're throttling me. So bye-bye. And then, of course, ever since the start, starts like, as long as it's not illegal, do whatever you want. We're not really watching anyway. So
I'm on Start's. I'm now with Start, and the service is awesome. Exactly. We love Start. Exactly here. So, yep, so definitely check that out, fast.com. If you find things are really slow, it'll give you a good idea of what's happening. It basically goes to one of Netflix's servers. But, yeah, nice little thing to have there. Another tool in the toolbox. Okay, speaking of tools in the toolbox, or maybe some tools, story out of the States, heart patient was undergoing a medical procedure. They had a lab device. So basically, they were doing a, let me find it here, it was some sort of heart surgery thing. Mm-hmm. So it was the patient was sedated, and there's basically a monitoring device that goes into the patient. So it's a patient data module and a monitor PC is connected by a serial cable. It's used to provide doctors with real-time diagnostic information during a procedure known as a cardiac catheterization, where they insert a tube in a blood vessel to see how well the heart's working. Well, in the middle of this, the PC kind of froze.
Oh, man.
I hate it when that happens. No kidding. You know, so I suppose the good thing is it just froze. It all of a sudden didn't go beep, beep, beep. You know, that'd probably be even worse.
That would have been worse.
Yeah. So basically, in the end, they did what the most common thing we usually tell people is a reboot.
Yeah.
And everything was fine again. So it turned out what happened was there was some antivirus software set to scan the machine every hour. And that was against what the actual vendor said to do. But again, it just goes to show you have an awful lot of these. You know, different machines now doing lots of big things. The problem as well is, though, some of these are actually locked out so they can't get the latest and greatest security updates, you know, because they don't want them on the network. So it's kind of a catch-22. This article from Ars Technica is actually quite good. We've got link to it. So, yeah, everything was fine. The patient was fine. Again, it's a monitoring tool. It wasn't keeping the guy's heart running or anything like that. But it's still kind of scary.
It is absolutely really scary. And I think the other major lesson from this is build your stuff on Linux. Why on earth would you build it on a Windows device? With, like, especially now. Well, like, I guess if it was now on Windows 10, sure. But
yeah,
it's not. Yeah. Just stop it. Like, this is mission critical stuff. You know what?
And it doesn't say if it was running XP or not, but what are the odds it was XP?
Oh, really good, unfortunately.
Even money.
I guess it depends on when it was actually manufactured and designed. Yeah. But stop it. Stop building life mission critical things on Windows, please. And I like Windows 10.
Exactly. So I'm just looking down at the actual official report from the FDA about it. It doesn't mention the brand name Merge Hemo Programmable Diagnostic Computer. It doesn't say what OS it was running.
No, but it's from Merge Healthcare. Merge Healthcare, cut it out.
You heard it here first.
Like Stephen Colbert used to say on his old show, you're officially on notice.
There we go. Derek's put you on notice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we lost Stuart a little bit. So I will say that we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Here's a little something from Olio Digital Labs. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Olio is a web development agency based in London, Ontario, with a highly skilled team of designers and developers. Olio can help any organization glean insights from its data, integrate multiple pieces of software or data together, or build you a great website to help your brand shine on the web. With a team that has done custom web application development for large retailers, built algorithms to help merchandising teams be more efficient, and built beautiful websites for small and medium-sized businesses alike, you can be sure that Olio can help you. Visit oliodigitallabs.com today, email info@oliodigitallabs.com, or call them at 226-785-0420 to start the conversation. And thanks again to Olio Digital Labs for the support of the Canadian Tech Podcast.
And we're back. Am I sounding better now?
You are.
Okay, that was weird. Maybe it was some of the fireworks going off. Who knows?
I was
going
to say, I just heard some fireworks. So if you hear it coming through the audio, my apologies.
That's what happens when we record on Victoria Day evening. Okay, moving on from Google. we're finally free of Google in this show.
We are.
Moving on, and you mentioned Windows 10, so which means Microsoft.
Yeah, there we go.
And Microsoft, they recently offloaded Nokia after buying them. And now, again, remind me how much they paid for Nokia again, Mr. Developers Ballmer, something in the order of billions.
Oh, what, 7.8 billion U.S., something around there?
Something like that. And how much did they sell it for, Derek?
Well,
something like $350 million?
Not the whole thing. This is the feature phone business.
All right.
I think we need to get you a copy of Jumping to Conclusions. You've been all over tonight.
I'm all over the place here. All I know is they didn't make money on this deal.
No, certainly not. So, yes, they have sold. All right, so this is a little complicated, but Nokia is licensing the Nokia brand for use on phones, tablets, and potentially other handheld computers to HMD. Oh, where is it?
HMD
Global. Global Oy, also known as HMD, which is a brand new company based in Finland. This is an exclusive global license. Phones and tablets, there we go, for the next 10 years. And I don't know how much they're going to pay for that, but HMD has or is investing over $500 million U.S. over the next 3 years to support the global marketing of Nokia-branded mobile phones and tablets. And that money is coming from its investors and profits from the acquired feature phone business, which has been acquired by FIH, which is a division of Foxconn, a subsidiary of Honhai Precision Industries, also known as Foxconn, the company who makes tons and tons of devices, for example, the iPhone.
Right.
They have actually bought the remainder of Microsoft's feature phone business assets, including manufacturing, sales, and distribution, and that deal is worth a little over $300 million U.S. So Microsoft's walking away with some money. Microsoft will no longer use the Nokia brand at all. Nokia is now licensing its brand to HMD, and HMD and FIH together will design, manufacture, and market Nokia branded devices over the next 10 years. Okay. Or at least the next 3 years for sure, but they've got the license for the name for the next 10 years.
I think I have a book we can write next: the dummy's guide, the dummy's guide to this deal. Because holy cow!
Oh, and to top it all off, the new smartphones and tablets are going to be based on Android, not Windows Mobile.
Okay, so for a guy doesn't know much about Windows Mobile. So is Microsoft still going to be reducing Windows Mobile phones?
So the language this is bad for Windows Phone fans. And I know you are, right? There's 2.5% of you out there.
The
language, if I recall correctly, that was used was Microsoft is still going to be supporting existing Lumia devices and others, of course, HTC and Samsung have some Windows phones out there, supporting those devices and developing the software. So that doesn't really sound good for Windows Phone. Now, I do recall, I don't remember the CEO's name, sorry, Microsoft CEO, Satya Nadella,
yes,
saying a little while ago that, yes, we're taking our focus off of Windows Phone 10, but it's still in development. We're still working on it. I quite like the new Nokia Lumia devices. If the Continuum feature works well, where I can literally plug in a keyboard, mouse, and a monitor into my phone and use it as my actual desktop, that sort of thing is great. I know we're heading that direction. Maybe a little bit too early. You know, the app store market is not there. So there's obviously some big knocks against it. But right. I really feel like they're doing some really cool design, like UI design, and certainly hardware features there as well. So I hope it's not done, but yeah, the language coming out of Redmond is not all that positive,
at least in the short term. So it sounds like our friend in Kamoka, about the only one we know who has a Windows phone, maybe swearing a little bit tonight once he hears this. Poor Jamie.
Between Jamie and Forrest, I don't know what those poor guys can do. Forrest with his BlackBerry. Yeah. Yeah, Forrest Bivens.
We're going to have to quote.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to have to mention them when we put the show out, just so they'll just so they'll listen in to hear what we're said about them.
Sure. Yeah, I will give a shout out to Forrest today. I was talking with a local business owner who needs payment solution, and I yep. he thought he had met Forrest. He was like, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I've met that guy. So I messaged Forrest, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember him. I'm like, oh, it's looking good here. So props to him for responding on a holiday. I appreciate it, especially when I was standing right in front of that business owner.
Awesome.
But yeah, and him and his BlackBerry love.
Exactly, but he's got a good humor about it.
Yes, he does.
So exactly, and so does Jamie with the Windows Phone. He's had two, so only guy I know who's not only had one but liked it so much he got another one.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. Well, like I said, we'll kind of keep in touch. Yeah. Again, I always like competition. I think competition's good. And as I said, I've been playing with Windows 10 more, and I certainly, yeah, like you said, the Microsoft CEO. You know, there may be a point where your phone is your computer. You plug a keyboard and a monitor into
it. Well, and Ubuntu wants to do that too, and so it's like it's going to happen. Oh, okay. Quick aside: this isn't in the show notes, but Google announced for Chrome OS that they are actually porting. They have figured out how to make Android, the entire OS, run really, really quickly in a container, which is kind of like virtualization, but a little bit different. So any DevOps type people out there, you know Docker. This is exactly that sort of thing. And so now you'll be able to have the App Store, the Google Play Store, on Chromebooks for a limited number starting in like a month or two, and then rolling out more widely in September. And you'll be able to install almost every single Android app that's available out there on a Chromebook or Chromebox,
cool.
I guess. Yeah.
Cool.
So again, we're heading in that direction across all devices. Apple is like the lone holdout where it's like, no, we need two or three or four completely different OSs, and we don't want any of these things to merge. I was like, no, you need to take the best from all worlds and slam them together in the best way possible.
Yep.
And
exactly.
as much as it's really happening really, really slowly with Chrome OS and Android, we are absolutely getting there. Windows 10 is there. Ubuntu's heading there.
Yep.
Apple's the only low.
I think, and I'm sure if Apple's not looking at it very seriously, they should be. I wouldn't be surprised if they are. Hearing rumors about that.
Yeah, there's no reason why this $2,400 MacBook that's sitting on my lap can't have a touchscreen, for instance.
Exactly. So, okay.
Anyway, speaking of Apple.
Speaking of Apple, excellent segue. You're getting really good at the segues.
Yeah, I am.
I'm very impressed.
Thanks.
Okay, Apple. Okay, Apple, you know, as usual, makes billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Yes,
so when you make billions and billions and billions of dollars, you can kind of revamp how your stores look.
Yeah.
So
you can probably spend
almost
$1 billion making it.
Exactly. So basically, they just did a lot of new work on one of the Apple stores in San Francisco, a lot of renovations. Mm-hmm. And this looks like a store / museum / entertainment, you know, business center. It's pretty amazing. And we have a feature article from The Verge here in the show notes. And we can't really describe it. You have to see the pictures.
Yeah.
There's basically, it's a 6K video screen located on the second floor. It's called The Forum. Creatures, creative sessions with local experts dedicated to art, music, photography, gaming, and other Mac and iOS-centric topics. So, you know, it's going to have like the whole, you know, it's almost like a library, the way the libraries are turning.
Right.
You know, it's becoming a community. So just some gorgeous photos. And again, I was saying to you before the show started, you know, they may make billions and billions and their equipment's expensive, but I tell you, I go into an Apple store and I see, you know, people who are normally terrified of computers, and they become quite comfortable dealing with the geniuses there and all that. And of course, they're renaming the Genius Bar, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So this is my favorite part. It's not the Genius. It's not the Genius Bar anymore. And now, before I tell you what it's called, keep in mind the new Genius Bar has real trees inside now.
Yes,
and like
yes.
30 or 40, that's probably like a 40-foot ceiling in this store and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's now called the Genius Grove. Yo, man.
Exactly. I'm trying not to giggle too much.
I went to the Genius Grove the other day, man, and they had everything, man, you know? it's literally called the Genius Grove.
It is. We're not kidding.
Yeah. And I mean, look, this store is stunning. It is very beautifully designed. This is something like, I don't know who the architect was, but like if you handed Frank Gehry, like, hey, can you build a store? What would it look like? Yep. This feels like the sort of thing an iconic architect like Frank Gehry would do.
Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned
you have to remember as well, Apple's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Apple's, you know, Apple store, they make so much per square foot compared to everyone else, and that's how they do
way
it.
More.
It's the service. Yeah, exactly. So they can certainly get away with this. So yeah, this is going to be an interesting thing. Definitely check out some of these photos from The Verge.
Yeah.
I don't know how long until the local store will do this. I don't know, can they fit trees in Masonville? They could. They have the golf course.
Hey, we had a mini golf course in Masonville. We can absolutely put real trees in there. Again,
and in there.
Apple's on the outside wall of the mall, so they could absolutely knock down that wall, put in windows instead. I don't know where on earth they put it, and they put whatever little inventory of devices they have then, but you know, you could probably put a room. I will say, beyond the Genius Grove, one of my favorite, or the other two really, really cool things I like about this is the 42-foot sliding glass doors.
Yes.
That sounds really fun to watch, and this might actually be a legal like a bylaw required thing because of how big the store is. But they have a backyard quote unquote forum that will be open 24 hours a day, as a 50-foot green wall, free Wi-Fi, and a 47-year-old restored fountain from San Francisco sculptor Ruth Asawa. So, not only is it more to your point about becoming like a community space, they actually have an outdoor space that's part of the store that is open 24 hours a day. It has free Wi-Fi. Apparently, who was it? I was just listening to a podcast, another tech podcast, and they mentioned that an office building that was just redone because of the square footage of the office building and the extent of the renovations that were being done, they had to include a public space. So there's a suspicion that Apple might have just had to do that. But of course, if you're going to do it, Apple's going to make it look really good. So it sounds really, really cool. And they could absolutely do something like this at Masonville Mall. So hey, San Francisco's done. Come here next. That'd be cool.
I have a thought from Masonville. They got that old space used to belong to Target Canada not being used.
True. I don't think they need that much space.
It's two stories. I know they renovated the other side, but, you know, there's a thought. You know, giant, you know, we could have.
Yeah, hey, we're getting a Disney store.
Canada's biggest Apple store right here in London, Ontario. Damn it. If we're getting a Disney store, we got to have a decent Apple store. Exactly. Okay. Sure. So Masonville, just, you know, we're now putting you on notice as well. So there we go. Okay. Oh, this is going downhill really quick. Yeah. I'd say. Okay. That's moving on to our local story.
Yeah.
We're almost done. Thank goodness. And I'm sure our millions of listeners listening are saying the same thing.
I actually did have stocks earlier. I need another one. But anyway.
Matt there Duma. We go. I know I should get. I got one after this. I tell you, Matt Duma, drone guy. I remember him. He did some. He did some footage of the Roundhouse and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, is that the guy? Cool.
I believe it was. Yep.
Yeah.
Redbird Media. So he's actually now certified, only one of the few guys in this area to freely operate his drone over Western Ontario.
Definitely.
Or Southwestern Ontario. So he can pretty well fly almost anywhere he wants. So he's got a special flight operations certificate from Transport Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They're really recommending you get one of these because there's so many of these drones out there now. And, you know, they can be lethal. We've had some instances in Europe where, like, one accidentally got sucked into an engine of a British Airways plane on final approach into Heathrow Airport. That's never a good thing. It tends to annoy the passengers for some reason. You know, your engine all of a sudden whoop, just on landing. Yeah, the pilots don't like it either.
No.
So basically, he operates a business, and there's a lot of cases now where a business won't hire a drone operator unless they've got the insurance and they're certified and all that. So yeah, it's actually neat. And he's also going to be be helping people to do this, because Transport Canada is a little bit behind the times. I believe the application form is 60 pages, something like that.
Yeah. It's a 60-page application that includes safety and flight plans, amongst a bunch of other things. So he actually hired a U.S. company to help him fill out the paperwork. That seems a little excessive. Like a
flight. Yeah, it's Transport Canada.
I'm an aspiring private pilot, so I fully understand the need for safety and flight plans and that sort of thing. But 60 pages to fly a drone commercially? Holy smokes! Like you could probably cut that at least in half. And then if you clear up the language and that sort of thing, it'd probably be even easier. Folks shouldn't, if you're going to fly a drone commercially and therefore you want access to potentially restricted airspace and that sort of thing, absolutely put people through a process to make sure that they are legit, that they know what they're doing. I have no problem with that. It takes like, 1,000 hours of flying, private, or not that many, but it takes like $10,000 worth of ground school and flight school and et cetera to get your private pilot's license. So I'm not saying it should be easy, but I shouldn't have to hire a third party company from a different country to help me fill out paperwork either.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, people don't realize, but I believe it's you basically can't fly closer than 9 kilometers from any airport, heliport, or aerodrome.
I thought that was just
more than like 90 meters.
I thought that was still just a suggestion.
Well, it's still a suggestion, but they're really, I know, remember we talked about that, but it's like, that basically, because if you think, like, I look at aircraft here, they're not that high when they're on approach, if depending which runway they're using, or whatever, if they're coming into 0009, which just means they're basically landing to the easterly, they're coming right over the city. They get it's, and some of these drones are quite big, you can do some damage.
The one he's got in the picture here, that's pretty small. That probably weighs like 2 kilos and is not going to do a lot of damage unless it hits you in the face. Like the military drones are huge. Like I'm talking like, kit plane type size. Like they're not small.
Yep.
But what he's got here that he's, taking his video with and that sort of thing is quite small. He's using an iPad, for goodness sake, as his video viewer. So, it really depends, obviously, on your purpose for the drone and, whether or not you want to make money from it and that sort of thing. So, I mean, good on him for going through the process. Apparently, 864 of these SFOC certificates were issued last year. So obviously other people have gotten through the process and gotten certified. So it's clearly easy or not easy. Sorry, it's clearly doable. But 60 pages sounds a little ridiculous.
Exactly. So, but that's a good for Matt, and hope he continues. I know he has a YouTube channel. I should try and find it for the show notes. There's always some neat things there, so it's worth checking that out. Okay, we're finally to stuff we like. So I'm going to start. I found this. I was on Twitter the other day, and a guy. I think we both follow Mike Moffitt. He was talking about something and like he was blown away about something. So I went back in the timeline and there's this gaming documentary. Now, if for people of a certain age, usually us older guys, you're probably way too young.
I'm part of this group this time.
Okay, so there you go. But this is, some of the original, when you used to want a game, you didn't go on stream or Steam and stuff like that. You had to go down to the store, buy the box, go in and, install it and all that. Well, the way you learned about this stuff was through all the various gaming magazines. It was all the box art. And I remember from when I had my Atari 2600 way the hell back, the artwork was always amazing. So this guy is putting together this Kickstarter campaign and he's made his goal. that he's going to do a whole thing, a gaming documentary called Box Art. And he's basically going to, you know, interview some of the movers and shakers, you know, why certain game covers had different covers in different parts of the world. So, yeah, all sorts of things. It looks really cool. I was going through the trailer and looking through some of the old Box Art, and, my God, that brought back a lot of memories, especially the old 2600 and the Intellivision stuff, yeah. like the one for Space Invaders, for example. It always reminded me of a Boston album, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, this is like I said, looks like it'll be coming out fairly soon. He's going to start working on it now. So, yeah, good for him. So, yeah, Box Art, a gaming documentary. Like I said, for you guys of a certain age, you will appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm actually throwing in a link here into the show notes.
I see that.
I couldn't even remember the name of the game until now. It was called Cobra Triangle. It was a game for Nintendo Entertainment System, the old school Nintendo. And I know that puts me a little bit younger than you.
I love the, no, I'm laughing at the box art.
Yeah, man, I thought that was so cool when I was 7 years
old.
That was
so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Other Cobra Triangle out there, Cobra Triangle fans out there, feel free to high-five me. Just be like, Cobra Triangle. It'll be an epic high-five.
I like the reception. But Cobra Triangle, in the lineage of 1982, River Raid. Remember River Raid?
No,
the Atari 6- Okay, see, I was more a 2600 guy, and I was never much of an NES guy. So there's our difference. But very, very, very sort of similar idea.
Oh,
so,
and it was developed by Rare. Rare made this game. The guys who brought us like Donkey Kong and Banjo-Kazooie and Perfect Dark. See? Pedigree, man.
It makes sense. Okay, we're going to go down the road. Derek's going to go down the Wikipedia rabbit hole.
No. I didn't realize Rare also made RC Pro-Am. I loved that game. That was one of my favorite NES games ever. That is, I had no idea Rare made that. That's amazing.
Are you sure? How about, they also did Sesame Street 1, 2, 3.
I never played that.
Okay. Just saying, yeah, it's yeah. There.
No, RC Pro-Am was fantastic.
Oh, wait, and the follow-up sequel, Sesame Street ABC.
Oh, and the other follow-up sequel for RC Pro-Am, Super RC Pro-Am in 1991, and RC Pro-Am 2 in 1992, because back then you could make a game in less than a year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, like I said, we could basically take ourselves down one heck of a thing. But yeah, Battletoads Double Dragon.
Oh, okay, then. I downloaded Double Dragon for my Nintendo Wii. I have it on WiiWare. My oldest kid and I were playing I don't know, a few weeks ago, and he loves it.
Awesome.
So anyway.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right, classic
on to my pick.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you got?
I think we should do a round table on classic gaming. But anyway,
I think we're going to have to, yeah.
My pick, and because this is so rare in the Canadian market, this sort of stuff almost only ever happens in the US or in Europe, almost never here. So I was really glad to see this, is Chai Energy. Chai like chai tea. Chai Energy. They make an app that, as far as I can tell, works across at least a few utility companies here in Canada, Hydro One and London Hydro specifically, where if you sign up, you plug in your Hydro account number. It uses a data standard called Green Button a lot of utilities support. It's like a open data standard type thing. Mm-hmm. And once a day for free, it'll actually try to intelligently tell you through algorithms and that sort of thing where your biggest power suckers are. So whether it's your air conditioner, or you left your TV on, or you're leaving your TV on every day, or it's your set-top boxes, which use an incredible amount of energy, gaming consoles as well, et cetera. Even like over different times a day. So especially here in Ontario, where we have time of use billing, super important to get down your energy usage in the middle of the day if you're not home. And they also have a pro device, the Chai Pro, where it will actually sync up to your smart meter, which we all have now in Ontario, and pull in the data in real time. So you can actually tag, like, oh, that's my fridge. My fridge just turned on. And like, tell the thing, oh, hey, that was my fridge. And so it knows next time, oh, next time that there's a spike like that, it's the fridge, or it's the dryer, or the dishwasher, what have you.
Right.
So if you're looking for ways to, like, if you've already, like, I've already converted all my lights to LED, so that uses 10 times less hydro than it used, or electricity than it used to. But if you're looking for ways to, other ways to reduce your power usage, or even potentially get what's called a power payday for reducing your energy usage. I'm not sure exactly how that works yet. I haven't installed the app yet. But regardless, they've got this thing where if you get involved and actually like take the tips that they send you to reduce your energy usage, you could earn up to $10 a day doing that.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a really, really nice app. It's available for Android and iOS. It should help you figure out where your electricity is going and how to reduce your bill. And so even just the free version should, well, obviously it'll pay for itself, because if it saves you a couple pennies, it's paid for itself.
It's for itself, exactly.
And the Chai Pro, I think, is $99 US, so probably about $120. So that could be worth it if you can find more than
enough things, exactly.
$5 or $10 a month. You could have this paid back in a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. That's interesting stuff there. So again, more cool apps and more things. So yeah, it sounds like we're at some point we're gonna have to have a round table about old gaming things. Now I will tell you something. When I was unpacking and packing, I actually have my old Amiga 2000 and I have an old Intellivision. So one of the things I want to see if I can get them both working again, because I still have all my old games from them both.
And, nice.
Yeah, going through some of the boxes, there's some good classics there. So yeah, I'm sure we can get people like from the Games Day podcast, Matthew Hoy and company,
Corey,
get involved with that. Yeah, they're gonna love that.
Yeah, sorry, I just brought up the differences between the Chai and the Chai Pro. So
yeah,
Chai will get you once a day monitoring. Like I said, it will predict your bill, will track your energy savings. You can get the energy reduction rewards through there. It also will tell you whether or not getting solar panels for yourself would make sense, like whether or not you'd actually be able to save, and then customize your energy saving tips. The Chai Pro is actually only $50 US, so that's a lot better than $100. We'll do all that, and then does the appliance tagging and a bill breakdown for your appliances. You can also get rebate program matching, appliance on and off notifications, and safety alerts.
Cool.
So yeah, so that's actually only $49 US, $50 US. So that's obviously less than $100. So that makes it even more worth it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to see if Linden Hydro does the screen button data and all that. See if we can get the data from. Yeah, so I'm gonna check that out, definitely. So, all right, well, that's it for our holiday edition of the show. through all these speed bumps and other twists and turns and detours and a few potholes here and there and all that good stuff. So, for the Canadian Tech Podcast for Monday, May 23rd, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark,
and I'm Derek Silva.
Thank you, and be well.